Okay, so we're on the bottom of Mem Aleph and Aleph. I'm going to start from where it says the Amr of Hanan, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, about 12 lines up from the bottom. The last word in the line is Hanan, Amr of Hanan. So that's where I'm going to start from. What we're doing is we're in the middle of we were discussing the pasuk of that describes the unique fruit of Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Chita Seora, Gefen Tein of Rimon, Eretz that pasuk we were discussing initially. The previous part of the Gemara had said, well, each of the words of that pasuk are ordered in sequence to the significance of the fruit, so that if you're eating one, you should eat one which is of the earlier, of the higher priority and significance. We're now quoting, this is why I want to start over here, we're going to quote now a second understanding, level of interpretation of this pasuk, which is given by Rav Chanan. So, the Amr of Chanan. Rav Chanan explains this pasuk in the following way. This entire pasuk was all said in terms of measures, halachic measures. Each of these different fruit actually refers to a halachic measurement. And we're going to go through each one and explain how the measurement relates to the food. So it says, Ne'emar, it says the first item in the pasuk is chita, wheat. How is that relevant to a measurement? So it's nan. We have the following Mishnah. Now, Mishnah talks about a person who goes into a house which has saras. Now, if you go into a house which has saras, the person himself will become tameh ad ha'ariv. The pasuk says, v'haba'al habayit yitma ad ha'ariv. A person who goes into this house will become tameh until the evening. We're bottom of mem aleph amud aleph. So if a person goes into this house, he's going to become tameh. Now, the case we're talking about in this mission is ha-nichnas labayis, ha-menuga. A person goes into a beis menuga, a house which has saras, v'keilav al-ktefav, and he has his clothing swung over his shoulder. And it's a piece of item of clothing that he's not wearing. V'sandalav v'tabosa biadav, and his sandals and his rings, his signet ring is not being worn, but they are being held in his hand. So in that case, hu v'hein t'mei miyad, he and they become tummy immediately. Now, the pasuk, there's actually two pasuk. One part of the pasuk says, if a person comes into the house, he's tummy until the evening. Going into this house, the entry into the house is what makes the person tummy. The next part of the pasuk says, v'ha'ochel b'bayis yichavis b'gadav. The person eats in the house. Or it says, if he sleeps in the house, meaning he's spending more time in the house than just a moment, then his kalim, his clothing, have to be washed. They too become tameh, and he has to wash them to remove the tumah. So the requirement to become tameh for the person and for his clothing is different. Himself, it's as soon as he enters into the house. For his clothing, it is a certain amount of time that he tarries, that he stays in the house itself. That will make his clothing tameh. But that's only when his clothing is being used as clothing. If he's carrying his clothing over his shoulder, and if he's holding his sandals in his hand, or his shoes in his hand, or his ring in his hand, not wearing them, they're not functioning as clothing, and therefore they will become tummy like him immediately. So that is what the Mishnah is referring to. He's holding the clothing. They become tummy right away. But if the scenario is hayalovesh kelav, if he's wearing his clothing, the sandalav beraglav is. His shoes are on his feet, the tabusav, the etzvosav, and his rings are on his fingers. So then, hu tamei miyad, he will become tamei immediately. V'hein tohorim ad sheyeshev b'chdei achilas pras. They will only become tamei. The clothing, the items of clothing, will only become tamei once he stays there the amount of time necessary to eat. K'dei achilas pras. The famous, what does the k'dei achilas pras mean? So it's half a loaf of bread. Now, a loaf of bread was defined in terms of an eruv, a kikar, a loaf of bread, was the size of something between, machlok is either 6 or 8 egg volumes of a size of a bread. That's the amount, which is the amount equivalent to two standard meals for a person. That would be that size. That is the amount of size which you need to establish. If you're making an eruv, you want to be able to travel 4,000 amos out of the city, so you leave your eruv, 2,000 amos out of the city, that how much bread do you have to leave as your eruv? The answer is that'd be two meals worth, which is going to be either 6 or 8 volumes of egg. Kedei achilas pras is half of that amount, so it's going to be a 3 or 4 egg volume, half a loaf of bread. Now, as long as the amount of time it takes to eat that, and we're talking about, the Gemara explains, pas chitin. lo pasorim. We're talking about a wheat bread, not a barley bread, which is an easier bread to eat. It's smoother and softer to eat, and therefore will be eaten faster. And mesav, we're talking about also that you eat it while you're reclining, not running around where you're moving around, therefore you're distracted. So again, you eat it faster. And the ochlam beliftan, and you're eating with some kind of condiment that, again, helps your ability to eat it faster. Okay. So in all those circumstances, that is the amount of time under those conditions for which, if you stayed in the house that amount of time, that you would become tameh with the clothing. The clothing would become tameh. Okay. The next word in the pasuk is sora, a barley. So what is barley in reference to a halachic measurement? It's not. It's a mishnah. Etzim kisora. If a person comes in contact with a barley-sized bone fragment of a corpse, so he becomes tameh, whether b'magav, the Gemara says, whether he touches it, or b'masa. Masa means he carries it even if he's not touching it. Ve'enu matameh ba'ohel, but if he walks into a house and the house has a tiny fragment of the bone of this size, he will not become tameh. This distinction between whether it's in the house, whether you're touching it or carrying it, is a halachah of Moshe Mitzinai, simply a tradition from Moshe. Next word in the pasuk is gefen, so the grapevines. What is that halachic measurement? Kedei revius yayin lenazir. It refers to that, okay, we know a nazir has three things which he cannot do. He can't drink wine, he can't cut his hair, he can't become tameh lemeis. Those are the three things he can't do. How much of the wine that we know that drinking the wine directly can't drink a revius of wine? Okay. Now, what about if he not only is he not able to drink wine, but he can't even go ahead and he can't eat the solid components of the grapes. He can't eat the peel or the pits or the shoots of the grapes. That's exactly right. Rashi quotes that. That's exactly right. So the chartanim, zagim, and lulavim, he cannot eat those parts of the grapes. How much of that volume can he not eat? The answer is, it's a revius of wine. So what does that mean? You can't eat a volume of grapes, the grape substance, of the solid, the amount of the size of a revius of the wine. And why wine? So Rashi explains, the reason why, now first, you know, we're talking about in each of these cases where the item isn't the iser itself, where we're using it to measure something. So how is wine being used to measure the pits and the peel of the grapes? And how is it important that specifically wine as opposed to water, some other substance? So the answer is because we're going to use the typical principle of displacement. If you take the solid substance and you have a cup of wine, which is full to the top, and you're going to just put the solid inside and displace the wine as it spills over the side until you've displaced the revius of wine, that is the volume of solid for which a nazir would be chayav, which he would basically, transgress his nazirus if he ate that volume. Now, wine is different than water, Rashi points out, because wine is thicker and has a greater surface tension since it's a thicker substance. And therefore, you could put more solid into the cup before the amount of the revius spills over. Water will spill over quicker and have less of the water rising above the edge of the cup than wine would. Maybe undiluted. I don't know if we're talking about diluted or undiluted wine. I'm actually not sure. But
the wine was thick, much thicker than
wine. Yeah. Even their diluted wine?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it says that the pipes have to be different sizes, uh-huh, that it would get down at the same time.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, different thickness. Yeah. No, that's water and wine in general. But that's even our, right. Being, I don't know if our, I don't know how our wine really super. Oh, okay.
How much is revius?
Oh, on this one. A revius is a quarter of a lug. A lug is six egg volume, and a revius is a 1.5 egg volume. So, like, the size of 1.5 eggs is the size of revius, which is about 4 ounces. Let's give a rough estimate. About 4 ounces. 3.5, I don't know exactly.
So if you drink a little bit less than that, he's already half drunk, and he's good.
The nazir?
Yeah.
Okay.
He can get drunk.
No, legally not. Legally, it's under a cup.
No, it's not malik lugma.
Legally, you have to have a cup of wine in order to get drunk.
This is the amount of volume that a nazir will be obligated on to transgress to zero. And for that amount of solid substance is the amount that is displacing a revius of wine in a cup. And because the wine is thicker, maybe even substantially thicker, and the water, more will be displaced, more solid will be required to displace a revius of that wine. That's the share. Okay, let's continue.
50% alcohol?
50?
No. We'll do that later. We're sticking. Okay. We'll do the final. Okay. So we have to get to it though. So the next part, the next word is te'ena, the fig. What is the halachic measurement of a fig? So that's kigurgeres lo sa Shabbos. When you the dried fig is the volume of food. When you want, if you're going to be obligated Shabbos and you're not allowed to transfer something from one domain, the Rishus HaRabim, let's say a public domain, to Rishus HaYach, it's a private domain. When you carry something, it has to be, like everything else, a certain substantial volume. If you take out a tiny speck of food from one domain to another, you're not obligated Shabbos to a Korban Chatas. So what is the volume of food that we consider to be substantial, significant, chashuv? The answer is the size of a dried fig. Whatever food you're eating, but it has to be the size, the volume of a dried fig. That is that what that word is significant for. Rimon, what is the halachic measurement significance of a pomegranate? So the answer is tisnan. Now, when you have a utensil, the background is when you have a utensil and becomes tameh, so some things you can put in the mikvah and you can make a tahor. But some things, like, have to be broken. And when the kli is broken, it's not functional anymore, it loses its tumah. The tumah departs the vessel. Now, if you are going to buy a utensil in Bed Bath & Beyond, and it has the tiniest hole in it, you're not buying it. I mean, a hole that's not supposed to be there, right? You're not going to buy that. So therefore, if it's a utensil that is from the Uman, from the store, even the tiniest hole, the tumah is departed from that vessel because it's useless. Who's going to buy that vessel until it's repaired? But if you own a utensil, in those days it was not easy to come by. There is pottery or other utensils. It wasn't like you bought it for a dollar in the dollar store and you threw it out after one time. But in this case, they would, if they had a little hole, a small hole in their utensil, so they would simply use that utensil for larger size items. So Rashi explains, like, if you had something which had the size of a hole, the size of, let's say, a nut, you would use it for something that was the size of a larger fruit. And eventually, when you got to the size of the pomegranate, okay, those are pretty big, there's not much more you're going to use that thing to store because whatever you're putting, it's going to fall out. So at that point, it's lost its utility, and therefore it's lost its tumah. That's the background. So the Gemara says, Kitna, it says in Mishnah, called Kli Balabatim, any kind of Kli that you and I have in our house. So what is the size of the hole that's going to be significant to cause it to lose its tumah status? The answer is, Shiuran Kirimonim. It's the size of the hole, the size of the pomegranate. Because at that point, no one's interested in using that anymore. That really has lost its utility. Eretz Zeis Shemen. So what about olives? What is that significant for? So Amr of Yossi, Berev Chanina, that is why it says Eretz, it repeats Eretz, Zeh Shemen. It's because Eretz, it is the land, Shekol Shurek Zeisim, all of its measurements are like olives. Gemara says right away, Kol Shurek Sakadaitach, is it really all the halachic measurements in Torah are all about an olive? Ha'ika Hanach Demar, we just gave lots of other measurements that are different sizes, not olive size. So why is he learning the pasuk to refer to all many measurements? The answer is Ela Eretz Shurov Shurek Zeisim. It refers to a land where many, 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 many halachos, or the majority of halachos, the most famous size, if you want to know a halachic size, is a zayas, is a kezayas. And Rashi quotes a number of examples, like if a person eats chelev, if he eats a forbidden fat, or blood, or nosar, or pigul, the size of that iser is the size of a kezayas. At that point, you're chayav for whatever the punishment relevant to that prohibition is. So again, that is why it says in this pasuk zayis dvash. Why does it say dvash? Here refers to the date honey, not bee honey. So date. So shiuran. So that case is kikosevis lagasa, a very fat date, a thick date, a large date. Biyom kippurim, the amount of the size of a volume that you would have to eat on Yom Kippur to be chayiv is different than a kezayis because it has to be something which is going to give you a little bit of not satiation, not really that, but where you feel that you feel good, and it's going to take away some of the inui. So for that, you have to eat a little bit more than because I have to eat the size of a large date. So either the first opinion was Rav Yossi and Rav Yitzchak. They had learned that all different sizes of the that we discussed, all the different the words in the pasuk referred to the significance of the words. So where does he learn all these measurements from? Meaning, Rav Chanan, which we just read, has all these halachic measurements learned from this pasuk. Where is the other opinion who says, no, the pasuk isn't referring to measurements, the pasuk's referring to significance, levels of chashivos. The chita is more significant than the sora, etc., in terms of brachos. So the answer is, hani shurim behejim miksive. he'll say this other opinion, which is either of Yosef or of Yitzchak, like we learned earlier, he'll say these measurements are not written in the pasuk. The pasuk just says Eretz, Tisa, Sori. It doesn't say Rimon is the size of a hole in the case of a tuma. It doesn't say, none of this is like written in the pasuk. These are all hints. Ella midrabanan is what our Gemara says. Ella midrabanan. The kra asmachta b'alma, and the pasuk is only an asmachta. Now it's a little bit difficult to read this, that this is rabbinic, because many of these, or all these sizes, are Torah level measurements. So there's the Ganavi Gemara, which is an Erevin, which has the language of that, not midrabanan, but hilchasaninu. They are a halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. And the Rabbanan came, and they established, where do we know these traditions from Moshe? We can see a hint to them in this pasuk, a hint to them in this pasuk, which is often the Rambam refers to as like Divrei Kabbalah from Divrei Sofrim, that which is not explicit in the Torah, but that which comes from a tradition from Moshe, and the rabbi simply found a place in the Torah to give it a hint or a source, that is what they sometimes refer to as like Divrei Kabbalah or Divrei Sofrim. So this here is what we refer to as maybe here it means Midrabanan, not it's rabbinic. But sometimes the rabbis took the tradition and found a place in the Torah that you could see a remez, a hint to that idea from that place. Okay, so we're finished that one section. We're going to continue now, going back to discussing the levels of significance of the brachos of different fruit of Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Chis, it tells the following story: Rav Chis of Rav Hamnuna have a yatsi b'sudasa. They were sitting at a meal. Aisu l'kamayu tamrei v'rimone. They had in front of them both dates and pomegranates. Like at their Rosh Hashanah table, for example. We talked, Morty mentioned this the other day. So you have both two fruits of Eretz Yisrael. Which one should you eat first? So Shaka Rav Hamnuna, Ubarach HaTamrei Beresha. He took the date, and he made the bracha on that first, before he ate the pomegranate. Now, in the sequence of the pasuk, so Amar Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda said to him, the sequence of the pasuk would tell you the other way, that you should eat the rimon first. Lo sevir lemar lahad amar of Yosef, the same of Yitzchak, ko amukdam b'pasuk zeh, kodem lebracha. Anything which is earlier in the pasuk, which appears earlier, should be first with regard to the bracha. And the pasuk says, right, eretz chisa seora gesen te'ena v'rimon, and then only last is zvash tamar. So the rimon should come first and should have its bracha. Why did you make the bracha, he's asking, on the dates first? So amar leis, he said to him, when it says in this pasuk a second time eretz, it says eretz chita seora v'gefen uteina v'rimon, and then again it repeats eretz zeshemen udvash. When it says eretz the second time, it resets the level of significance so that the dvash is only number two related to eretz. And the rimon is number five. So if you want to know the significance, Tosa says, by the way, what if you have two, which are number two to the eretz? Like you have, for example, seora, which is number two. Or give me an example. Yeah. You have chita, which is number one next to eretz, the first one. And then you have zeishem, which also the first one, eretz zeishem. It's also one of the second group. So the answer is, well, the first, then you go with the first rule, which is the earlier in the pasuk wins. But the so there's two rules with regard to the order of how you should make brachos for the fruit of Eretz Yisrael.
What about the fact that the chita is adama and the zayit is peitz?
The chita. Oh, if you're eating it, that wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
No, that wouldn't matter.
Say that if you say the eitz first, you could say the adama after.
If you say the eitz first,
you're supposed to.
Even if you have, in your case, if you have an eighth, even if it's a chita of Eretz Yisrael, you would say the eighth first? Oh.
No, I'm saying that was something that we learned in a different context, where we said that if you had the choice of two things, if you say the more specific one...
That's the better one. That's the better one. So you're saying, in this situation, if you have the option of eating that which is...
Good question.
...the better bracha, because it's a more specific bracha, how does that relate
to
the...
Well, if you said Adama on the Chita, then you can't say Eitz on the Zayit. You're covered, supposedly.
You could normally be covered, unless you have in mind not to have it specifically covered. You can say, I want...
These are two different, which way you look, right?
Well, the Chita would go first in this example.
For this, the Chita...
You should make the Eitz on
Hilchos. Yeah, it's just meaning. So I assume the Shiva Saminim. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the Shiva Saminim win. I have to, you know, gotta look it up. Or there's we gotta give an Ichabur on that. Yeah, next week. All right, we gotta look into this one. Okay, but yeah, that's a good question. It's always a great, interesting thing when you have like competing rules. Yeah. All right, you
asked the question.
You stumped the teacher. Yeah, you gotta come back with it now.
Well, nobody can be the Hittai first anyway to all of us.
Right. Okay. Anyhow, so the order would be, in theory, the order would be, I mean, Chita, Seora, Zayis, Dvash, Gefen, Teena, and Rimon. That would be the order. Okay. If you're keeping score.
The very bottom.
Right. Okay, let's continue. So now, we're now starting a new section of Gemara. This is going to be about what happens when you are eating foods in the context of a bread meal. And this is a very, very important and very practical topic. So we're going to get through the primary sources, and maybe at some point there'll be an Ian Chabura on this topic as well. So let's start from the Tudah. Oh, no, we're not to that day. We're almost there. So Amr, just to finish the last story, so Rav Hamnuna explains to Rav Chisda why he chose to make the bracha first on the date. So Amr relates, Rav Chisda back to him, man yahavla nagri deparzal v'nishmaseh. So he says to him, you know, what a great explanation you gave us. If only we had like lead, feet that we could always stand to serve you. I mean, we had such a tremendous learning from your teaching, so we wish you could always continue to serve you. Yes, Morty.
Okay, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Rishon Aleph Hey, that which we say the Chita and Seora go first, because it's early in the Pasuk. Dafka kisha asa mehem tashilur pas. It's dafka if they were made into a pastry or bread. Avla kosei chita shebrichasa bari pri adama. But if you're chewing the Chita and it's a hadama, eino kodemus lebirchas bari pri.
They say, well, is that because of
Brachas
Pirish, or is that because it's not like it's because it's an insignificant way of using it?
We would be saying Hamotzi or Mazonos, and then it would go first.
Right.
But if you're eating it as is, it's a Dhamma, then it goes second.
Okay.
Good answer. You're getting complicated. Wow. You got yeah. He's getting complicated. Yeah, you got to pay attention. Excellent. Okay. Now it's continue from the Tudat. We'll see if it comes up with an explanation. So
they do bring down here that if you go based on we pass, you go with chaviv most. So if you like the chita,
okay, that's just
more,
that's like a side thing.
Separate
that's
thing.
side. Okay, so
that's another factor.
Tudat. Yes, chavivus wins also. There's another chavivus wins in theory. Okay, so Itmar, have you? So we have like 15 minutes to get through. So Itmar, have you lifnehem te'inim ba'anav misochasuda? Let's say you bring in front of a person within the meal, he's served. He served, right? He served dates and grapes. Some kind of fruit. Raw fruit. He served raw fruit. Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna said, so what should you do about brachos? Remember, we're talking about a bread meal. You're being served during a bread meal, raw fruit in the middle of the meal. So Amar Rav Huna, tu'unim bracha lefneim, ve'intum bracha l'acharein. You have to make a bracha before, but you do not make a bracha achron after, meaning you're going to have to make a bray pri ha'et on the fruit, but afterwards you can include that you will not make a bracha because you're benching your birchas hamazon is going to cover the fruit that you ate during the meal. Now, why is this? So Rashi basically explains that the story we're talking about is because these items are things that the logic behind it is because the fruit here, according to him and this understanding, is, wait, let me find the exact place. The reason why it needs its own bracha is because in this case, the fruit is not coming to enhance the meal, enhance the bread. Meaning that which you eat with the bread is going to be tafel to the bread, according to Rashi. And this is Rashi's shita throughout the entire sugya here. That when you're eating stuff together with your bread, if you're the way they would eat, you have some food, you eat the bread, you put the food. It's an ikr v'tafel. The main staple of the meal is the bread. And everything you eat with the bread is tafel to the bread. So therefore, as we know, the rule is ikr v'tafel, only you make a bracha on the ikr. In the case of the fruit, according to this first opinion in the Gemara, the fruit has nothing to do with the bread, and therefore you make initially a bracha rishona on that fruit. Yeah.
If you're eating bread and fruit. So you start off with a grapefruit to start off, right? Do you have to have some bread with each?
Oh, so we're, the case we're talking about is we're not eating it together with the bread. We're not halacha lemaaseh yet. We're just learning the opinions in the Gemara. So the first opinion, the Gemara Rav Huna says, if you eat fruits separately during the meal, you make a bracha rishona and no bracha achrona. There's a lot more to discuss about what would happen in other scenarios. But let's just get this straightforward because this is a three-way machlokas. Okay. Also,
I understand it's only when they brought the fruit
during
in the middle
of the meal. Correct.
They didn't put it on the table.
Oh no no! It could have been present. It could have been present
from the beginning.
It could have been present from the beginning.
To do any bracha on the fruit.
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay. So
if it was already on the table.
So in this case, he viewed Lefana. They brought him. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, v'chein amar of Nachman tu'unim bracha lefneim ve'ein tu'unim bracha lacharem. He says the same thing. Rav Nachman has the same opinion. Make a bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona. Rav Sheshes Amar, his opinion is tu'unim bracha bein lefneim ubein lacharem. This fruit needs a bracha rishona of ha'it and needs a bracha achrona of rein nefashos. It needs both brachos. And he says because she'ein lecha davar she'tu'unim bracha lefanav ve'ein tu'unim bracha lacharav ela pas haba v'kisim bovad. The only thing which is going to need a bracha before but would not need a bracha after is like pasav v'kisim. Now, we don't mean it would need any bracha at all. Rashi explains the case we're talking about is it would only end up getting a brei nefashos. So Rashi says what we're talking about is something which starts out as a mizonos but ends up a brei nefashos. And this is only one example where you would start out with making a bracha rishona and not make the appropriate bracha achrona. What is that? So the example Rashi says is something where after the meal they would eat the basaba b'kisim. Rashi says, according to Rashi, there's many different explanations. Rashi's explanation is, we're talking about these like toasted kernels. And these toasted kernels, they would eat them after the meal. And with that, they would also serve this type of like bready substance that also had lots of nuts and spices and sugars in it. And it didn't have a lot of flour. It certainly wasn't, you make a mazonos on it. But you need a lot of it, and therefore you end up afterwards making a brain of fascist, because you don't eat a full, because a large amount of flour, you're eating a small relative volume of flour component of this this type of pastry, and therefore it gets a bracha rishona of brain mizonos, but bracha achrona of brain of fascist. So Rav Huna says, that's the only case where you start out with a bracha rishona and you don't end up with the appropriate bracha achrona. But if you have, for example, the case we're talking about, which is you're going to eat fruit in the middle of a bread meal, so you're going to make a bracha rishona, you have to make a bracha achrona, and the bracha achrona for that would be a brei nefashos. So that would be a case where you would have to make the bracha. So again, second opinion is, if fruit in the middle of the meal needs a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. Pligad Rav Chia, and they argue with Rav Chia, the Amar Chia pas l'teres kol minei ma'achal. Bread, eating bread, when you make the bracha of hamotzi l'chanaretz, it exempts all foods. The yayin poter kol minei mashkim and the wine, it exempts all drinks. Okay, during the meal. So Rav Chia's opinion would be that the fruit which is eaten in the middle of the meal requires no bracha rishona and no bracha achrona. Okay, so three opinions. The first opinion, which is Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, says that the fruit will require bracha rishona, but no bracha achrona. The second opinion of Sheshes is that we require bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. And the third opinion of Rechia is that requires no bracha at all because the bread takes care of everything without exception, the way wine takes care of all drinks without exception. So, now, finally, this is the important part, Amar Rav Papa. Oh, in all these cases, the Rashi is explaining along the entire way that all the reasons why you would or would not make a bracha on something with bread has everything to do with whether the bread is the ikar and this item is a tafel or not, and whether birchas hamazon would be applicable to the sweet item or not. So Rav Papa, and we'll get now the summary, and we'll learn according to Rashi and we'll learn according to Tosos, because there's very different halachic differences. Rav Papa says, Hilchasa, Devarim Habayim Machmes HaSuda, Besocha Suda, Ein Tu'unim Bracha Lo Lefneim, Lo Lacharem. So there's going to be three categories. Let's just do it one at a time. Category number one. Devarim habayim machmas hasuda. Those things which come because of the meal, betoch hasuda, in the meal, during the meal. In those cases, they need no bracha at all. Okay? Now Rashi explains what we're talking about. Rashi says that is defined by things which are eaten with the bread. Like, you take a, I mean, they have like a big piece of bread, and you eat some food, and you take a bite of bread. You eat some food, and you take a bite of bread. That is everything coming with together with the bread. That is Dvarim Habayim Machmasa Suda, or you would say Machmasa Pat, and it requires no bracha because Rashi is simple. Ikar v'tafel. And this is, there's no, all the Rishonim asking Rashi, there's no chiddush here. This is simply an example of whenever you eat two food items, one is considered the primary, and one is subservient, an ikar and a tafel, that you make the bracha on the ikar, and no bracha on the tafel. That's exactly the first case of Rapapa. The second case of Rapapa is shelo machmas suda, b'socha suda. Let's say you eat something during the meal, which is not because of the meal. So Rashi says it's something that's sustaining. It's something that's substantial in the meal. And the example Rashi gives is porridge, cabbage, beets. But you don't eat them with bread. You're not eating the cabbage with a layer of bread on it or some beets with bread on it. That's the example Rashi is talking about. In that case, in that situation, it would get a bracha before. It would get a bracha before because it's not tafel to the bread. Not a tafel to the bread. It's not eating with it. Ve'ein tuna bracha l'acharem. They do not need a bracha afterwards because since they are mazon, they are satiating type of food, it's part of a birchat hamazon, that which is satiating. So it certainly fits with your bracha chrona, but needs a bracha rishona because it's not tafel, literally tafel to the bread. The third scenario, according to Rav Papa, is la'achar suda, those things which come after the meal. In that case, tunim bracha, bein lefneim, bein l'acharem, they require a bracha before and after. Rashi says that is an example of fruit. They come having nothing to do with the meal. They're just there to sweeten your mouth. And they're not due to the bread, and they're not for sustenance, they're not to fill you up. And according to that, they need a bracha rishona and a bracha chrona. So fruit, according to this final psak or papa, according to Rashi, would require a bracha rishona and a bracha chrona. Who is that passing like? Rishesha. Now, Tosos doesn't like this explanation of Rashi because it would come out, according to Rashi, a passing like Rav Sheshes against the majority of the other rabbis, which is Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. And he also points out, according to Rashi, the overarching principle of this entire Gemara is basically Ikar V'Tafel, which is an explicit Mishnah, which we mentioned earlier and we'll get to later on in this parak, which is anytime this language is Ikar, bread, and you eat something with it, which is Tafel to it, it doesn't get a bracha. Anytime you eat something which is not a Tafel to the bread, needs its own bracha. That's nothing new. That's nothing significant. There's no chiddush. Now, there are other Rishonim who have interpretations within Rashi to try and explain what Rashi might be talking about. But according to Rashi, the driving force of this entire part of the Gemara is bread. Bread is an ikar, and that which comes with bread and a bread meal doesn't require bracha. Now, we'll get into toast in a second, but you can imagine another way to look at this entire discussion in terms of a bread meal is, we made a very significant bracha. We made a bracha of hamotzi lechem in aret, and eating bread. Might be that bracha, and in the context of a meal, means that everything eaten during that time is subsumed onto that one bracha, having nothing to do with the bread per se, having to do with the bracha that I'm making on a meal. And the bread, the bracha meal on meals is hamotzi lechem in aret. So Tosis explains that the three categories as follows, and this is the way the Shulchan Aruch passes. The three categories are, number one, that which is normally eaten during a bread meal. During a bread meal. What are things eaten during the bread meal? Meat, fish,
potatoes,
cooked, any cooked dishes, right? Cooked dishes, spices, all sorts of things that would just normally be the stuff your wife serves during the meal. None of that would require any bracha, not because it's a tuffle to the bread, but it's that which is eaten during the bread meal. What was the
hummus? Hummus for sure.
So anything like that, not because it's tafel.
Even if you eat it,
it's just part of the meal. It's part of the meal, and therefore that which is part of the meal doesn't require a bracha. The second category, which we said is that which is eaten during the meal, but not machmas asuda, not because of the meal, that's just to sweeten your palate. Like you want something to kind of sweeten things along the way, so you put out a little bit of fruit. So according to Tosfos, that's the second category. The fruit, in that case, meaning that which is brought out, not to satiate you, not as part of the meal directly. Normally, you wouldn't serve fruit as part of the main course, but it's there to sweeten the palate, or at the end of the meal to give you something sweet, put out some licorice or candies on the table. So that would require bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona, according to Tosfos. What's the third category? The case which is not la'achar suda. Tosfos says that's literal. That the only time you're going to have to make a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona is the meal is done. You haven't made it in bench yet, but either all the bread is taken off the table, or you literally, what they explain is that they removed the table. The table has been completely removed, and now you serve something else. That's nothing to do with this meal. Therefore, it requires its own bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. The only time that might come up is if you're in some kind of maybe like a fancy wedding or something like that, and they clear everything, including all the tables away, and you all move to a different place to have dessert. That might be a situation where you might lach our suda entirely. Maybe it requires some bracha rishona and bracha achrona. But generally speaking, the best scenario is to bench first. But whatever the situation was, you bench and would have to make the appropriate bracha as it would relate to that specific food item that you ate, whether it be fruit or if it was some kind of pastry. Now, if the pastries are also satiating, meaning like if you, generally speaking, if you serve something, without getting too many details in the halacha, because there's a lot of cases, but generally speaking, we learn from Tosfos, which is how we pass it, is that if you go ahead and you were to serve something which is also satiating, it's like I'm serving dessert because we're still hungry, and therefore I'm going to put some nice cake out that it's going to fill us, you're not going to, the pashtus of the sugya would be that you would make a bracha rishona on that cake. Because it's machnas asuda, it's part of the things you're serving to fill you up, as opposed to like our in-laws like to just throw some candies on the table before at the end of the meal, before they get dessert all ready and people start picking at either some nuts or they pick at some Mike and Ike's or some like Jelly Bellies, whatever. So those are things that have nothing to do with the meal. They're not to satiate you. They're just to sweeten your palate so you get ready for the next course or something. That is the kind of thing which you would have to make a bracha rishona on.
They do bring down, I think we said last week, that I think the Piskei Teshuvos bring down serving grapefruit as an appetizer. There are those who say that you don't make a bracha on that. It's not just to suit your palate, it's actually to fill you up. You're hungry and you want to eat something. That's the first course of the meal.
I've heard a whole machos in Achrim about this. They also distinguish between grapefruit and cantaloupe. One is more satiating, one is more to sweeten. Yeah, you have to look at. But we can't get to all the cases. But the general categories. Rashi Iker V'Tafel. Tosos, it's really about the fact that this is part of a meal, or is it not part of my meal, it's just to sweeten it up, or is it after my meal entirely? Those are the three categories according to Tosos. And the last thing I want to mention that I thought was interesting is it comes out of the Magen Avraham, which is poised in the Orach HaShulchan. Now, the Orach HaShulchan, I want to share with you two parts, and we'll finish up with this, because, you'll do the wine next time. The last one. But the last thing to mention is the Zohar HaShulchan says, nowadays it's very common. Everyone's on some crazy diet. And no one wants to eat bread anymore, right? No, carbs, starch, right? It's like no one wants to touch the stuff. So the Magen Avraham wonders, what if a person is at a bread meal, has no interest in bread? Like he's forced to have, or she is forced to have, some minute part of bread, some little bit of bread. Maybe it's exotic, and like a minimum. Because that's what they are obligated to eat, but they have no interest in bread. They don't want to eat a bread meal. They never touch. They don't touch carbs all week long. Will all the different things in that meal be possible because of that bracha on the bread? This is not a bread meal for them. They're not eating a little bit of bread in the beginning, a little bit of bread in the end, or a nice volume of bread. They have no interest in bread. It's certainly not. Not only is it not an ikur, it's like I'm forced. They're not interested in the bread. So that he leaves it is not sure, because is it about the bread or about the bracha? And this is, that idea is brought by the Orach HaShulchan. The Orach HaShulchan says, and he explains, that there's really two main ideas that we find coming out of our Gemara, based on Tosos and the Maskana of the Gemara, which is that when you eat bread, there's two components of the bracha or the part of eating the bread. Number one, bread's the ikar. It is an ikar regarding tafel. Anything you eat with the bread doesn't require bracha. But number two, you also see that the bracha on bread of Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz is unique, because it patterns everything that's part of the meal. It is not because when I eat my meat later on, nowadays in Western ways of eating, right, in American diet, we don't have like a huge lump of bread which we get each to your seats and you're constantly, kind of picking at the bread as you eat your food. You might only have a little bit of bread and you eat a lot of, steaks or potatoes and other things that are really the main part of the meal. But the bread has defined the meal as a substantial meal. The bracha for a substantial meal, not ikar v'tafel, not about bread, but the bracha that you made on that bread of Hamotzi Lechem Ha'aretz covers all the other brachas you need to make. Not because it's subservient to the bread, not because the bread is constantly being eaten, But because you've taken care of a bracha, which covers everything in the substantial meal, that is part of that substantial meal. And that, he says, is why, in his opinion, that even if a person just eats the kezias, has to be at least the kezias, because otherwise you wouldn't bench. And if you're not going to bench, well, then you don't have a substantial meal. Everything's going to require its own bracha chrona, so it's certainly going to require its own bracha rishon, he says. So he believes, the Aruch Shulchan says, if someone's on some special diet, and it comes to Shabbos, and they're like, you know, all week long, I don't touch carbs. But on Shabbos, I'm going to eat my kezias of bread, and I'm not touching it the rest of the meal, I have no interest in it. They still would not make any bracha rishon on anything else that comes during that meal, because he says, the bracha rishona of bread, like wine, covers everything that comes afterwards, because you are exempt from all the subsequent bracha. Okay.
Also, wouldn't be safe to think that a mazon also covers everything.
That certainly does as well. Correct. Anything that's
right. So for example, including the vegetarian, which was then they have to make a separate bracha on the fruits or whatever it might be if it came afterwards.
Oh, after the meal.
Right. If you get it, you get something after the meal.
Right.
Before you bench,
you would have to make a separate bracha on as well.
But you actually have to have in mind not to be yotzei.
No, you wouldn't even have to have in mind because it doesn't. The reason why you're obligated in that second bracha is because it wouldn't even cover.
Right, but since it covers everything that came, but it still carries with the meal.
The fruit, which is during the meal, that we say would require bracha rishon, but no bracha chorona. That which is entirely after the meal. The main part of the meal. I mean that you've removed the table, everything's off, it's a separate eating set. Then you require a separate bracha, yeah. That's the only case. Not a typical scenario. Okay,